Welcome, one and all, with your host, Rolando, and his co-host, John. We are the Skeleton Boys.
Hello and welcome to The Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
Johnny.
Ah, there it is.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
How's everybody doing?
We're great.
This is my ASMR. I still don't know quite what that acronym is, but now I'm going to crumple some paper.
And welcome to the show this week.
I've had my fan on this entire time, not saying we recorded an episode before this.
No,
but I just realized that I've had my fan on the entire time.
We're not saying we decided to record two episodes on the hottest day of the year.
All right. You remember I mentioned, not that we recorded an episode right before this, but I said there's something unnatural sounding about it. It was a fucking fan was on the entire time.
There you go.
Whoops. Oh, all of a sudden it sounds so nice. Who cares that I'm just all of a sudden just buckets of sweat profusely pouring out of every single pore of my body?
I mean, you could leave that fan on. I think that would be okay. I mean, we could just match it to the previous episode, unrelated previous episode sound. So
no, they got, not that we recorded it right before this, but I don't want to make it seem like we recorded it right
now. No, we're a weekly podcast. Yeah.
But no, luckily it is roughly 5:35 p.m. Los Angeles time, and that makes it a nice brisk 95 degrees.
Nice, so chill. Good. 97 on my side.
Nice, chill Predator 2 levels of sweat on every single person.
You know,
in the city.
He would have a really hard time, you know, seeing everybody's heat sensor right now because everybody's dying, sweating. And welcome to the show. This week we will review Willard. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts, and then we go to a deep spoiler analysis as John's video freezes up. Hope he's okay. Are you okay?
Oh, did yeah.
My video just...
It's... Oh, did it freeze?
Yeah. I can see you now. I can see you pixelated.
No. That's good, because what had just happened was... a fruit fly was trying to attack my alcoholic beverage.
Yeah.
Have you ever, because I know neither of us are big wine drinkers, but do you vaguely remember having like a glass of wine and then looking in it if you're outside and it's just like, oh, there's fucking fruit flies just dead in my drink now?
No, I don't think I've ever had.
That's mainly why I gave up on all our wine enthusiasts out there. You know what I'm saying.
Go in and...
I'm relatable.
We're going to talk shit about wine. Go in and unsubscribe right now. We are talking shit about wine.
If you don't like red wine that makes your cheeks, tongue, and butthole dry as hell, then I don't want to hear it.
Yeah. Just unsubscribe right now. We'll have none of this. But first... we will go to TV Corner. We go back to Chappaquiddick, episode 9. We're nearing the end, the episode before last, for the end of this.
We are getting to the climax? Customer? Oh,
I'm edging towards, raw edge towards this climax. And
Also, forgive me, this is my third alcoholic drink of the day, not because we recorded an episode before, but because I think I had mentioned, I know, a week later, and I still have the same exact, it almost seems like the same amount of fruit fly problems that I had a week before, which is wild to think.
We have like a good 3 hours of you just bashing fruit flies.
Complaining about fruit flies.
It's on.
And I'm just waiting for comments to be like, why don't you just cut a water bottle in half, invert the top, and put some apple cider vinegar. Now I've done it all.
Yeah.
My building managers don't give a fuck that our trash cans are just...
Lay out some glue.
Las Vegas. I started throwing sticky traps in there. I'm not kidding. I don't know what else to do. Yeah, but it's Las Vegas for fucking anything with wings in our dumpster, which I have the privilege. No, let me take that back. The honor of parking my vehicle, my luxury vehicle, right in front of.
Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. We're big Hollywood people.
Yeah. Well, you know, honestly, people that are in the know that I have the most Hollywood situation.
Yeah.
If it's not one thing, it's another.
Which is funny.
Even though neither of us
actually live in Hollywood. Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. I'm pretty close, though.
You're the closest.
It takes me like, it's like a 3-minute drive and then I'm in Hollywood.
Are you still like East Hollywood? Because for a minute you lived in East Hollywood. You East Hollywood still technically? Are you East?
Technically, this was like the East Hollywood area. I mean, that's what they were trying to pitch it as for a while, but I think they gave up on that because the area I live in. Am I going to give this away? Am I going to get stalked? Is called Virgil Village, which is one of the oldest like sort of towns on this side.
Yeah,
like sort of areas on this side. It's like I think as old as Echo Park.
Mm-hmm.
And probably older than Los Feliz and Silver Lake, I think. It's like old, like old-timey area.
Gotcha. What about Highland Park?
Getting gentrified. You're welcome.
Speaking of old, what did you think of Chapo 8, The Gathering Dark?
You know, this... In the grand scheme of how TV shows work... Should have been the end of it, I thought.
Ah.
Because usually the last episode is kind of like the epilogue episode.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And we did not get that.
No.
There's still a whole bunch of shit going on.
The town's preparing for a fight. I think that's kind of where we're heading. And Loa...
Little update.
go for it.
A fly has made its way into my apartment.
Not a fruit fly, an actual fly.
No, an actual fly. I'm graduating onto the bigger guys. No, again, I'm telling you folks, it is so hot that it's just like, it's Las Vegas for anything with wings right now. It's so horrible. I mean, I was at a bar last night. I mean, by myself because I'm a real cool guy. No, there's a vegan spot called Wolfie's that I like to go to if I'm on that side of town. So I just kind of sit there and drink some vegan micheladas because... You know, even though I'm vegan, sorry, unsubscribe, cancel me. I still like some of the things from my college years. So micheladas are a big one for me.
Delicious drink.
And I was sitting there, and this is the first time in years in LA, because usually they don't fuck with me, but I started getting bit left and right by mosquitoes.
Hmm.
There was like one, like I usually, they don't bother me at all. I mean, I think it's because I usually have like pants on and like sort of long sleeve shirts because the sun and I don't agree with each other.
You got to paint the picture. So you're wearing flip flops, some bicycle shorts and a wife beater.
Yeah, it's the weekend, right?
Weekend outfit.
I got my weekend attire, you know.
Yeah.
Like during the week, if I'm at work, I go in rugged, rough, hard hat, Carhartt.
Don't gear, talk to me.
Unironically. Yeah. Yeah. Don't talk to me.
Yeah.
The weekend, it's like cut off shorts. Fucking everything in sight.
Mesh shirts.
Who gives a shit about monkeypox? you know?
Micheladas.
If I get monkeypox, I just get to go around and brag to people like, oh, sorry I got monkeypox. It's just because I fuck, you know?
It's
like, it's all good.
An honor. Yeah, a brag.
Yeah, it's like making fun of people that have herpes. I'm like, that guy gets laid, you know?
Oh, you know what?
What about you?
I have an interesting story about micheladas. So I was working on this movie and I was trying to explain a micheladas to a coworker because he had just came with the DP from Maine.
I want to say gross, but that's kind of nice.
He came together.
From Maine. He traveled
yes. from Maine. And this is like the only other thing he had done. Cause I think he was like technically like they were college friends or something. And anyways, he's the type of guy that has like, there was one restaurant in his town, you know, like he came from a very small town, you know, whatever, Maine.
Which we got to be honest real quick. We have a feel for that because when we were kids,
I told him this.
We basically lived.
Same childhood. I'm not dissing the guy. I'm not dismissing the guy.
That's like every single one of us too, that come from the RGV.
Right.
When we were kids, we basically lived in a cluster of towns where we're like, oh, we're a metropolitan area. I'm like, yeah, but these cluster of towns, each of them have like one restaurant.
Yeah, I had a Dairy Queen.
Like one gas station.
Yeah, that's all I had to eat was a Dairy Queen. That was like the only place.
You got those footlongs, man.
Like,
oh, so good.
Yeah. And
I don't eat them, but they're so good. I know they're good.
A little town history about that is that the owner of that franchised that Dairy Queen was on the government, local government. So for years, decades, he never allowed anybody else to have restaurants there because of that. So when he was finally voted out like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we started getting like Walmarts, Whataburgers, fucking like, you know, every fucking fast food place imaginable. And that's what happened. Yeah. That's why we had a Dairy Queen for the whole time. He would deny all of these businesses because he wanted to be the only business in town. So that's just a little aside to this story.
It's so funny, like when people complain about movies that have like small town politics, and it's like, that's so silly. That would never happen. I'm like, you didn't come from where we came from, man. I don't know. Especially like, well, I don't want to get fucking murdered, but like, you know, like people disappearing. It's like, yeah, you know, it did happen. We just don't talk about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever.
Yeah.
What are we going to do about it? Nothing.
Yeah. I mean, if you lived where I lived, you could have like at least 5 or 6 spots, you know, nobody would ever find a body, you know, because it's just, there's nothing out where I lived.
I love how modest you're being. 5 or 6
Yeah,
spots.
5 or 6. I'm being modest. Yeah.
Like Los Fresnos was like in the thick of cities.
It really wasn't. Yeah.
Like you just drive like another 20 minutes, you dump them in the fucking ocean. Who cares?
Exactly.
They're gone.
You know, a lot of people.
We have sharks. People don't know that, but we do.
Actually, I was going to mention that too. I guess I never thought about this, but there were a lot of people who washed up ashore. On beaches, more than you think. They're half eaten.
Because they quote unquote drowned at sea.
A lot of bodies would pop up. Yeah. That also was an interesting.
Yeah. It's just like that never checked out for me because I did a lot of stupid shit as a kid in the ocean. I never, you know, I had a couple of close calls, sure, but.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah, like there were a lot of boat accidents in quotes. I came from
because boats usually have captains, which is what Adrian Brody, who plays Boone in Chapelwaite, was a captain of a boat.
I gotta tell you about this kid. So real quick, I'll just say that he didn't know what a michelada was, but when I described what it was, he's like, oh, you mean like a Bloody Mary, the white version? Yes.
No,
the main version of a michelada. Yes, he's like, oh yeah, I've had those before. And I was like, yeah, it's like a Bloody Mary. Yeah.
Not the same thing.
Nor fun.
I understand where the confusion comes in because they are both very heavily tomato based.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But not the same. Yeah. Especially because micheladas in Mexico are usually made with nothing but hot sauces.
Yeah.
And I shrimp. Don't like those. I'll be honest. It's not my favorite thing on earth. Well, just like beer and hot sauce. Yeah. Like, I get that enough because I'm addicted to chips and salsa. But
sorry, I already had bad heartburn.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay, so that's a long way of talking about Chapel 8. I like this episode. I don't know where we left off. I think that I like that they're showing that even though Loa has joined Jacob, she still is like concerned about her family and doesn't really like some of the other people in this cult or whatever, coven or whatever the fuck you want to call it.
Yeah.
What's her name? Apple Girl, I think is what she's listed as. She.
Yeah.
And I thought this was a good episode in showing that, of course, it seems like there's going to be a redeeming arc for her. I know in the last episode, we talked about how Loa did this turn, right? And it kind of felt like it came out of nowhere. And we surmised that maybe it was because she was just a dramatic ending. And now that we're spending time with Loa and with Jacob, she still, even though she's a turned vampire and turned on her family, it looks like she still has emotional connections to them. So that's going to be interesting.
Which we got a hint of with Emily Hampshire's dad.
Right, yeah.
We got a small hint of that. Which is also interesting because like there's got to be some sort of humanity going on if this guy knows what his daughter would look like 20 years later.
Yeah.
You know? It's just a little confusing, yeah. But okay. Because, you know, usually you can chalk it up to, this is like movie magic, folks, but can chalk it up to like, oh yeah, well, daughter looks so much like the mom or the dad, but they're actors that got cast together.
Yeah.
And Emily Hampshire looks nothing like her parents, but
yeah. You know, and another thing to that is the more time we spend with Jacob, the less I'm liking him. it feels a little, and I'm using this as an exaggeration, but it feels a little SNL sketchy with his portrayal. You know what I mean?
Are you telling me when he starts singing that weird fucking like sailor slash like Celtic song at the end that you thought it was funny? That's bizarre because so I watched the last two episodes today. I'll be honest. I mean, I'm just kidding. The last episode, this episode, we didn't record two episodes today.
The hottest day of the year.
On my laptop, yeah, on my laptop, which has like a super high resolution. So it goes past 4K, but like I watched it on 4K. And I was about to compliment like, man, Jacob's makeup looks fucking phenomenal. And then he starts singing that fucking song at the end. That's when I was about to mention, like, wow, his makeup looks so good. He starts singing the song. I'm like, wow, this is fucking silly.
I think with Jacob, less should have been more with him. The more I'm seeing him, yeah, the more I'm seeing the actor, the performance. And unfortunately, the last like part of this season has focused so much on him. And I don't ever truly believe that this guy who's like this all-powerful leading cult vampire dude is like, you know, go sending people to get books for him, needs all these people to do his bidding, and you know, and sings, has a beautiful,
yeah,
you know, voice as well. It's just, it's a little off.
maybe that was like his one hobby. Instead of like really learning how to stack his fucking finances, he decided to just become a singer, which makes sense.
Yeah.
But if there's one thing, so I've gotten heavily into I know, nerd alert, but heavily into anime the past, like, I don't know, like 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that they all have in common is they're sort of like the teacher elements or like the respectable old timer elements. Like, you never know what these guys are capable of until like two or three seasons later. When there's like a moment where it's like, oh, what the fuck are we going to do? Like, there's no way we're going to fucking win.
Right.
And then this like old timer where you're like, oh, like, what's this guy going to do? Like, he was just a guy that taught them. He's like, well, let me fucking show you.
Mm-hmm.
and they fuck shit up. Like, they should have done that with Jacob. Like, just kept him on the sidelines, kind of like, oh, well, I'm just sitting here. Like, I don't give a fuck.
Right.
Yeah. Until he has to do something. And then it would have been really cool to see him, like, really fuck shit up. And, like, how are we supposed to beat this guy?
Yeah. I think they've fortunately centralized him so much to the story. And I think that's actually a detriment. Yeah. It's been a detriment so far, I think. And in terms of, like, believing he's, like, something to be fearful of or terrified, I guess.
Right, yeah. And you're right. Like, I took a closer look at his teeth. I know this is, like, 3 or 4 episodes back, but talking about the bite marks, his teeth are very close together. So I think the idea is the further along they progress as vampires, the more contorted and sort of evolved their bone structure and faces become.
That's interesting. Yeah, I didn't notice.
Is what I'm kind of noticing.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's a nice detail. I do like...
Yeah, this episode, I gotta say...
Go ahead. What? No, finish. Finish your thought. Yeah.
Oh, I was just gonna say, like, I think I did like this one more than the last episode. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Even though it's got its problems. But I did like it more. And that was going to lead me into talking about how I had a turn of opinion on the constable and his wife and that storyline. I actually ended up really enjoying it this time around.
Yeah.
I thought it was really cool, like, everything that was going on. And in fact, I was like, man, they're honestly the most solid actors in this episode. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what ends up happening is that she, again, maybe for the last time, tries to manipulate him to join with her, right? And the Boone and the team, our team here at Chapaway, they decide to convince the town people that they need their help to defeat the people from Jerusalem's Lot, or at least try to get the book, because it could, based on Boone's visions and world-ending visions, that they need to help him destroy the book. So he tries to rally the town, and then what they decide to do, which I think is actually pretty smart and fun, and it was a fun sequence, was expose the wife, the turned wife, in the sun, so they can prove that vampires exist. And that scene happened, and it was very nice and gruesome. Yeah, and awful.
But I didn't think Charles, Pastor, and Constable... we're going to have such an effect on these people. Like, I was wondering where the episode was going to go after that.
Right.
And then it takes a fucking weird turn for me, but I respect it.
Yeah.
Pretty much everybody that was kind of a problem.
Yeah.
As far as, yeah. right, it's not me, but everybody that was a problem towards what is supposed to be the end goal to try to get these people to rally together ends up dying. It's like almost in the next 15 minutes are let's see, Pastor and his and now ex-wife, I guess, right who she was very vocal about being like, you are evil, blah blah blah, evil, blah blah blah, evil. But she does a great job. Like, what a phenomenal performance from that actress. But she decides to bring him back to their old home, to try to clear the air. And they're talking, they're having dinner, and she's basically like, I don't think these are any of the real lines, but let me try to paraphrase what happened. She's basically like, hey, ex-babe, you know, I actually do still kind of care about you. I don't really want you to go out there and fucking die. I made some lobster bisque.
Yeah.
It's from Charles Boone's ship that came up ashore. I saved some for you because I heard it was super good.
Yeah.
How about you eat some lobster bisque? And he's like, oh, yeah, this is scrumptious. Blah, blah, blah. I'm so happy we're able to have this conversation. Duh. That's what killed Charles Boone's wife. He eats the lobster bisque.
The story has...
he starts to choke.
Become full circle. The bisque is back. And the pastor's dead. He dies.
Elton John's The Biscuit's Back. Yeah.
The Biscuit's Back. Yeah. The Biscuit's Back. No.
And she's like, you know what? I don't like you, and that's why I did this. But this lobster bisque looks pretty fucking good. good. I don't know. I might try some. Hopefully, I don't think I'll die. I'll just eat a little bit of it. She eats some. She dies.
Yeah.
So they are gone.
Yeah. She's like, laugh out loud. I hate you. LOL. I hate you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this lobster bisque is fucking to die for. And they did die for it. So we move on to her dad, who's basically...
What's his problem? What did he do what he did?
Well, yeah. And what is he? Is he just some like rich guy that lives in town?
I guess so. Holy shit, yeah. He's just like...
Keep trying to figure out what his role is in this town. And he's just been there?
Assuming he's the rich... He's assuming he's like the richest guy in town? Is that the idea?
I guess, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he's like... Oh, Charles Boone, you pissed me off because of your family. And he's like, but yeah, that was my family, bro. Like, I just showed up. I was at sea for basically my whole life. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, you know that old saying about, like, the sins of our fathers? And he's like, are you fucking kidding me? That shit's bullshit. And he's like, no, it's not. But the Bible also says that I should kill myself. And that's basically what happens.
He's like, let me... He's like, no, I don't like anything I'm seeing. I'm going to wrap my lips around this gun and shoot my fucking head off.
Yeah. Because the Bible says it somehow.
Your guns are in there.
And I know my daughter, that idiot, fed the rest of that delicious looking lobster bisque to her piece of shit ex-husband. I got nothing left, and he just shoots himself. That's the end of that.
I like Adrian Brody's reaction. No, literally, no. Minimally, no, and he shot himself. Yeah, and that was one of them.
Central part of the story is a lobster bisque seems to still be bad.
Still be bad.
Don't eat it.
There better be some resolution this last episode about the bisque.
Yeah, Jacob has the most beautiful voice on earth that makes the moon start to cry and eclipse the sun. So his beautiful voice is making the moon cry in front of the sun.
Yeah.
So now it's going to be total darkness, enough for vampires to roam. Charles starts to lead forth, and I think he says some sort of like Avenger-esque line that I thought was really funny. I forgot, but he says something basically the equivalent of Avengers Assemble, and he's like, let's go, right? And that's the way that episode
is. I like that after his wife is the constable's wife's like burns in the streets, Adrian Brody's, you see what I'm talking about? I need you people. I'll be in the bar. It's like, meet me in the bar. We'll talk about saving the fucking town. I don't give a shit about, give me nothing but problems. It's kind of the reaction there.
Yeah,
it's kind of funny. Last thing I do want to mention is I like that they're setting up like Apple Girl. They do a little bit of a scene with her and Loa. She's, I guess they have like feeding stations, and she's one of them where they basically allow the turned vampires to feed on the the people who are devotees or whatever.
Oh, I did enjoy that part, but I thought her reaction, her like
monologue,
her dying part, the Apple Girl's like dying, was very, very silly, because she was like, I'm choking, bleh. Like she basically stuck her tongue out. That might as well have been what happened.
you could have cut like 1 second sooner than their editor. It would have been less, probably would have been more favorable to the actor at that point. But yeah, I do like that they're setting up the fact that like once Apple Girl spills her intention that once she's turned, she's basically going to like not go along with anything because she just wants to turn and have the power of a vampire. She's like, I'll go along with what Jacob wants until I turn. And I was like, really? You're telling her like the whole spiel? We know you suck and you're like a bad character, like a bad person. I mean, you know, but
kind of a bad character.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not my favorite character.
Not my favorite character either.
But yeah, she does mention like, oh, I'm an angry girl like you too.
Yeah. I was like, oh, that's cool. Angry girls. Okay. It's like, do you have a missing leg? I got a missing leg.
It's the precursor. It's the origin story of Bikini Kills. I'm like, fuck yeah! If you had just told me this, what the show was about, I would have been all about it.
And I'm still. Why am I still wet? Loa's like, I'm still wet, and I have seaweed everywhere. Yeah. But yeah, this was fun. This was good. I'm excited about the ending. Hopefully, it's not a letdown. You know, in a sense that, like, hopefully there's some result. Obviously, Jacob is not going to survive, but I want to see what happens after, you know? How does this tie to Salem's lot?
I mean, I feel like Jacob is going to survive. I think Jacob will be the only one that survives, and he'll run away. I think it's the same sort of concept as,
does he go,
you know how I said, like, it seems like he's the oldest vampire and he keeps like devolving or like training or maybe evolving into something else. Okay. And maybe that's what this Nosferatu character is in Salem's Lot.
Does he go like that and then flies away or something?
That human.
Yeah. Yes. Side note. I just saw, what is it? That episode of What We Do in the Shadows, Oh fuck! Was it Ricky Daytona? It's so good. I missed.
Oh yeah, Ricky Daytona. So during lockdown, I was like, I need a fucking tank top because I don't know if you remember, but like 2020 was like fucking hot.
Yeah,
like ridiculously hot year. So I had this purple tank top because BT Dubs.
Yeah,
purple's my favorite color. So. And it said J.K. Daytona, like in a sort of Florida style, like Miami style writing. Yeah. And the bottom it said real human bartender.
Yeah. Ricky Daytona. There you go. Okay.
Oh, no. Jackie. Jackie Daytona.
We both got it wrong. There we go. Jackie Daytona.
Jackie
Daytona. I literally saw this week. I don't know why I don't remember. But, yeah, no. Yeah. So hopefully this is not a disappointment. I think we should move on to our main review of Willard. You're living a little bit of a Willard storyline yourself with the fruit flies, right?
I'm bringing that joke. I'm a bit of a scientist myself. I'm a bit of a scientist myself. That's my Willem Dafoe. Yeah, which incidentally, I got to get rid of a dead bug on my finger. I'll be right back.
Oh, okay.
I promise the bug problem is not that bad. Totally go on dates with me. I'll bring you back. It won't be a problem.
Yeah, no, you're good. John's very handsome and clean. Date him, please. John.
Again, the major focal point problems are not actually a problem. They're coming through my pipes for some fucking reason.
His pipes. That's not literally coming from his pipes. It's not a euphemism or anything. They're literally coming from his pipes. The flies are real.
No, it's 100% an STD. I'm half fruit flies coming out of my penis hole and my butthole.
There you go.
And my other hole.
Date me.
Other hole. Don't worry about it.
Date me,
don't
please. Now, if we sound like goofy, it's because we're melting. I'm melting. John's melting. Yeah. We're shiny and gross. But, John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please. Yes, I do. For Willard, 2003. Oh, I didn't number these. Coming in at number 3, Willard, Tom and Jerry story. Like, as soon as they introduced Ben, I was like, this is such a Tom and Jerry sort of fucking... Like, anyway, coming in at number 2 for 2003's Willard. Lonely man has ratty house. And coming in at number 1 for 2003's shock horror thriller. Willard. New friendships over some cheese.
Oh, I love that. Excellent.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Beautifully said. So, like we've been doing in the other remakes, give me some of your background. Have you seen the original? Have you seen this one before?
Fuck. I've seen this one before. The original, I don't remember at all. I have seen it. I remember because we talked about, like, yeah, Michael Jackson sang the fucking song Ben, yeah. Right? Like, it was the Jackson 5, but it was, yeah. Which, funny enough, I didn't remember they played in this movie, too.
Oh, yeah.
I guess it was like an homage.
Yeah.
I forgot that. But something that doesn't fly with me in this movie is, I think, growing up, I was so captivated by how weird and awkward Crispin Glover was.
I know where you're going with this, yes.
Like, it never occurred to me how fucking sharp, clean-cut, and actually handsome the dude is.
Uh-huh.
So watching this, I was like, a lot of this doesn't check out. It only makes sense because he's, like, very good at acting weird and meek. But if you look at him, he could be fucking... like the dude that was behind Adolf Hitler the entire time. Like, he play that character. He's so fucking clean cut. His, like, clothes are always so sharp. I don't know. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
That's my 2 cents on Crispin Glover
acting. I actually, you know, I don't think I've ever seen the original Willard. I don't have a memory of it.
It's got the,
but
it's got the guy. Do you remember in the first X-Men, the senator that turns into goop at the end?
So you, yeah,
Magneto. He plays the original Willard,
right? He,
I forgot the guy's name.
He does have Bruce Davison. He has a cameo in this. He's the oil painting. He's the dad. Did you catch that?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Oh fuck! I don't know why I didn't put two and together. Yes.
So that is a little, like, you know, tip of the hat that, like, the father was the original Willard Stills or whatever. So, and then you have Crispin Glover.
Styles.
Excuse me. Yeah. And which I thought was cool. That's really fun. You could tell that the writer, director, whoever loves this movie and was paying, you know, a lot of respect to it. And I think it does. And I think this movie, I originally saw this movie in the theater. I don't know why I saw this movie in the theater.
Yeah.
I just knew that it was a remake and, you know, Crispin Glover's in it. And I remember reading about how Crispin Glover, he's not somebody you've seen a lot of movies, but iconically he is the dad in Back to the Future, right? He's just most, like,
absolutely.
Back to the Future, without saying, you know, this goes without saying, but it's one of the most cherished movies of all time, right? It's beloved. So,
which is kind of tough because depending on when you were a kid, too. Because I know Charlie's Angels came out, what, 2003?
Yeah.
So let's say you were in elementary during that time, you'd probably remember him as a creepy thin man.
That's right.
That came out in both Charlie's Angels movies.
Yes. Yeah.
Because the dude doesn't know how to fucking age, apparently.
That is true. Yeah. And I just was taken. This was a Crispin Glover, he had a lot of hand in this. He, like, working with the directors and acting. Crispin Glover doesn't really act a lot anymore. He does pop up here and there, right, and things. So
once in a while, yeah.
So it's for him,
TV shows mostly, but
yeah, for him to kind of pop up in this main role, and him loving to be in part of this project. He even sings the title song Ben. He covers it at the very end.
Nice.
So,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like it's a labor of love for him. And so he's actually starring it. And he's one of those actors who's, like you were saying, like, kind of like basically a character actor who finally, you know, who's starring in this movie. And I think this movie is excellent. Still holds up. Even though it was released in 2003.
I was going to mention, it had no business being this good,
right?
For a 2003 movie. Yeah.
You know, I mean, the story is kind of like it's essentially timeless, right? In the sense that, like, he's like this, like, down his luck, beaten down kind of guy who's able, gets this, like, supernatural-ish power, right? He's able to communicate and...
Well, that's something I also had to comment on that I thought was really such a smart move. I think you could argue that the two white rats, which are the off-colored rats from the rest of the rats, they're all brown or, like, basic colors for rats, are the smart rats with red eyes, which made me think, like, oh, they're like test lab rats, right?
Right.
Not important to the story. But it would make sense that the two different colored rats are the ones that are going to have some sort of like different connection, and they become, you know, they have a symbiotic relationship, right?
Almost. One story parallel that I didn't connect with before was maybe these rats in a way don't exist, right? They're like shades of his personality, broken personality, right? That he's just like this killer. That's just like an offside thought that I had, that like Ben was one side of his personality. Ben was, of course, a larger, darker rat who was more vicious and conniving and cunning, while Socrates was the sort of more intelligent, friendly, nice. And you can tell that Willard is more protective of it, right? Almost like it's his innocence, you know, like kind of like he's trying to. So that's the only one that he kind of like protected through the whole movie. So I saw them as parallel personalities and stuff. Yeah. Mel, go ahead. Were you going to say something?
No, I was going to say that also checks out, because throughout the movie, Ben never seems to try to harm Willard except for one moment. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like a wanting acceptance.
Right. And Willard is... Which in this movie constantly trying to push Ben away, like, no, Ben, we're not doing this. And like, he doesn't want to give in to this like broken, fractured side of himself, right? His that he eventually, of course, succumbs to, right? Because he's basically been treated poorly by, you know, his boss, you know, his mother, everyone, everybody. Life, yeah, everybody in his life. So it's kind of just an awkward, weird guy. And there's a nice, if you want to interpret it that way, you could, right? There's a nice little analogy you can. And but just on its face and the surface, I think this, like, even like, I think a lot of the rats were like not CGI, right? Except for like maybe that one scene towards the end where he's like releasing them, like
you could totally tell, like when he's in the elevator. Yeah.
That one,
like, clearly that's CGI. But no, I think like most of them were
practical,
not just like practical rats, but animatronic, from what I understand. One of my favorite bits of trivia in the trivia section of IMDb is, I think it's like the top hit too, is for some scenes, Socrates and I forgot the name of the other white rat were male. For other scenes, they were actually females according to what the scene needed. And I was like, what a super uninteresting bit of information that this person was like, first got it. I'm the person that told people on IMDb.
Well, I mean,
I'm cool.
You know, there's going to be some weirdo movie fan be like, that rat had a penis in one scene and didn't have a penis in another. That's wrong. Screw you, Hollywood.
That rat Socrates in that other scene had a little old pecker. I saw a little thing dangling around like it was fucking Salvation Army fucking jingling bell, just going around, just dingling ling, and then the other scene gone. I don't know if they cut it off or that was a little rat vagina, but it was weird.
Exactly.
That's what that
was. That's what our listeners sound like. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. That's interesting. I mean, I imagine they used all kinds of rats, right? Like,
yeah. I don't know if I'd be particularly bent on like understanding what their gender was. I'd just be like, they probably used a shit ton of rats.
Little no.
They had to make it look similar.
All rats are gender fluid. They don't identify male, female. They don't care. They just want.
Another fun fact that probably most people know, the reason rats kind of destroy and non everything, the reason they're such an invasive species is because their teeth continuously grow, so they got to keep gnawing on stuff to file it down. Otherwise, I have seen photos of rats that haven't done it, and the teeth kind of curve up and sometimes go straight back into their skull and then kill them eventually.
So to add to that mooses, they have their antlers constantly grow. And nobody's seeing this, but I'm making the gesture of a moose to my head. So just to describe this. And they have to, that's why they like rub against like things like trees and stuff. So they can shave them down because they're in a lot of pain because they can grow wild. So there's instances where, have you ever seen a moose that doesn't do it? It's wild, dude. They go everywhere. It's like contorted horror nightmare moose situation if they don't do this to themselves. So
it's also, we come from an area where we don't have a shit ton of that sort of fun wildlife.
I know, right? We have a lame wildlife.
Well, I mean, we do get, I didn't know this, but people fucking flip out when I talk about the amount of rattlesnakes we have. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a big thing.
They're like, what? Holy shit. How are you still alive? I'm like, what do you mean? Don't fuck with them. They're cool. Yeah. Or then when I talk about horny toads and how, like, yeah, they squirt blood out their eyes. I'm like, oh, that's so fucked up that you made them do that. I'm like, I didn't. That's their defense mechanism. They're not going to die. They're just like, don't fuck with me. I don't care so much that I'm going to fucking squirt blood out my eyes. And even I would be like, okay, I'm not going to fuck with you. Like, if a human being did that in front of me, I'd freak out and run away.
Take a picture of it. And then run away. Yeah. But basically, the wildlife is like Australian-based. Very dry, dangerous creatures live in Texas.
We got the spiders. Yeah. We got the toads. We got all the fun stuff. Like, our wasps are fucking relentless. You've heard of yellow jackets? Well, we got them.
We got they are all of them.
Everywhere. Yeah. Horrible. So I forgot how old I was when I was finally like traveling through like the northern part of Texas, because we get deer. Like, we have a shit ton of deer everywhere. Holy shit, the most suicidal deer on earth live in Texas. True. I promise. Like, they want nothing more than their last breath to be fucking up your car is what they want. In the middle of the night, like at 3 a.m., they are like starting sprinter ready to run across the street as your headlights hit them. And it's like, geez, you fucking idiots. So it's like, as much as people think, oh, you live in the back roads, you can go as fast as you want. And it's like, yes, depending.
Yeah.
Like, if you're traveling through the north, you probably want to go below the speed limit because you're going to hit a fucking deer. That, but like once you hit like areas where it's like, oh, moose, and it's just like, oh, okay. I think the first time I saw that, I was like, oh, now I got to deal with a different type of fucking deer. Until I saw a moose on the side of the road, I was like, holy shit, this thing could fucking eat my car.
Yeah. Yeah.
These things are like all like the type of a bodybuilder that only focuses on upper chest and neglects legs.
Skip leg day.
Because they got the skinniest fucking legs, but they're like huge up top.
Yeah. But yeah, that's what we reviewed Willard.
That's Willard.
This was a really good movie.
Yeah, it had a fucking great ending too.
Yeah. Before we go to spoilers, I just have one thought. This is kind of like a fun, quirky movie. I'm surprised it got remade. Maybe it only got remade because of its name value.
Crispin Glover.
You know what I mean? It has a little bit of history. It has like a name value to it. But it's a very like odd, quirky movie, which is kind of like a gross word to describe anything.
No.
But
I'm still going to say Crispin Glover probably had 100% of everything to do with this film.
Yeah, and there's a lot of love in this movie. It's not just a simple story. I think they're trying to actually say something and kind of fun. Surprisingly still entertaining. What, like, almost 20 years later, right? Roughly.
Yeah.
Really.
Oh, I have to mention how much of a Sam Raimi influence there was in this fucking absolutely. Film. Because when I was watching the intro credits, I was like, am I fucking not realizing this is a Sam Raimi film? Which it wasn't, right? But it felt like it's so hard. Right. But it was also like during that time, I feel like they used the same couple of people that did like the claymation for like fucking Tool and Slipknot and all right. that shit. But like, because it had the same sort of intro effects as let's say like House on Haunted Hill.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Or I forgot. There's a couple of other movies that had the same idea, but it was like very Sam Raimi. And then when the score happened, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Danny Elfman did this? And I was like, no, I forgot the name of the lady that composed it. She did a great job, but it was so Danny Elfman heavy.
Right.
That I seriously thought it was a Danny Elfman song.
I should have mentioned this earlier, but a kind of understated performance from Arlie Emery. Would you say that? I mean,
all
things considering.
Well, I feel like I can say that about like every single acting job he's ever done outside of Full Metal Jacket. I can
he
say the same
has
thing
lived off that one performance, yeah. right? Like pretty consistently, you know, that sort of loud military person or whatever, right? But this, he's essentially playing the antagonist. He is playing the antagonist, but it's But it's actually restrained. It is actually kind of different from what you would expect from him. And I was, that's actually a nice turn from him. That's an unexpected turn, considering, you know.
Because
when you see him, you just assume like, oh, this guy's going to at some point scream at him and say every curse word and talk, you know, yell at him a million mile a minute or whatever. But it doesn't happen. It's pretty understated for the most part. I mean, he's still playing the dick boss or whatever, but it's a good turn. Yeah.
Because I got to give him a shout out for like his other two like performances of Santa in my mind for some reason, probably because I grew up with him. But The Frighteners, even though he played another sort of, you know, militant character, he was fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. And then Saving Silverman, where he plays like the guy's like old high school coach, and he's still got that militant sort of persona to him. But at the end, when he's still in prison, one of the characters, I think Jack Black, realizes he's gay halfway through the movie.
Yeah.
And he's trying to break the news to his old coach, who's still in prison. He's like, well, no, it's because I'm gay. And what's his name? R. Lee Emmy was like, what? Hell, I am too. And he's like, what, really? So they're just together, which I thought was like a sweet one of her early instances. What, they're probably trying to poke fun at gay people, but they're also not. I just thought that was it's cool that he would still accept roles. You would assume certain things about him, I think, is what I'm trying to say. But he seemed like a very open actor, very just like he wasn't just the drill sergeant that he was early on in his life.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And they picked against type. I mean, it's actually not against type. It's a understated, again, it's an understated performance from a guy who is usually like on 11. That's what you like. That's what he's known for. Right. Big and loud.
Which, were you getting like Max Schreck, Christopher Walken vibes?
Sure. Yeah. The hair.
Yeah.
He had a very 70s hair. Even though the time in this movie is kind of non-existent, right?
I don't know. I don't know what the time period of this movie is. That's, I was trying to figure that one out the entire film. I was like, I thought it was modern day.
Right, yeah.
But the vehicles and some of the clothes suggest differently. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, no, those are just some great thoughts.
Then we have that actress whose American accent is kind of bad. I don't know why they just didn't allow her to do her Mexican accent. Who was, she was in a couple of things, right? A couple of big things.
She was in, Mulholland Drive?
Yes. Yeah. And, Mulholland Drive, and she was also in something, like, she's always played the secondary sort of lead actress. Mm-hmm. The Punisher. She was also in The Punisher.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She was. Absolutely. Cool. John, let's go over to spoilers.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers. All right. So, all in all, Willard is still the bad guy.
He ends up becoming a bad guy, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's always kind of been he wasn't always a bad guy. He turns into the bad guy, but like, you always know he's going to be the bad guy.
Right.
But it's like such a weird, they did such a great job of his first turning is this dog keeps accosting him when he's trying to run away, mm-hmm. from Arlie Ermey's house. After he trains the rats to go and like destroy his new car, basically just the tires, mm-hmm. but he's running away from this dog, and the dog keeps fucking with him. And he's like, "Fine, you want to see what's in the bag?" And he throws, because he's got these two like satchels full of rats. He throws the dog in there, and the dog starts to whimper. So he releases the dog, and in true movie fashion, because I don't know if people are aware of this, you cannot harm animals in films, especially dogs. Actually, cats are okay for some reason, which upsets me. But dogs, you do not fuck with dogs.
Right, yeah.
So the dog pops out of the bag unscathed.
Yeah.
Just runs away. But that was like the first kind of turn until he really finally snaps, and I guess he trains the rats, specifically Ben, after Socrates is killed by Arlie Ermey, right? Which, you know, you want to be on Willard's side, but it's not anybody's, like, sort of... Of course he's going to fucking kill the rat. There's a rat in the fucking office. Like, there's no... He's not the bad guy. And also, like, I'm sorry that he keeps, like, shitting on Willard, but Willard's fucking up. You know, like, I feel for his home life, but, you know, there's also something to be said about privilege, right? I feel like a lot of people go through way worse and they still make it on time. Nobody ever knows, blah, blah, blah.
Right. He just found this one thing about him to just, like, nag at him because he had ulterior motives, right? Like, he wanted to, like, base...
So I think the real commentary of this film is not, because I would have started shitting on it because of privilege, but I think the real commentary is about mental health.
Yeah.
And how nobody was paying attention to this guy, and he was having a hard time.
Right.
And he's, you know, clearly in his 20s, question mark?
Generous.
30s?
More 30s? Generous. Look at you.
Sure.
So generous.
Yeah. Question mark. Yeah, just how, like, his, you know, he breaks to a point where he befriends rats.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which I'm not saying you can't have a pet rat. I'm just saying, like, you don't instinctively one day, like, oh, there's this wild rat. It's my friend now. It's like a little weird. Like, not weird, but like unhealthy.
Right. Yeah.
So
he, one thing I could have sworn happened at the end was, after Sakurashi dies or whatever, Ben kind of is the antagonist here. He's kind of leading all the other rats now and they've overtaken
his, he's just looking out for his homies.
Right. Yeah. They got to support the bros.
Yeah.
They've overtaken his house. And Willard's now trying to, like, get away from those things, but they've completely overtaken his entire house. And one thing I was going to say was...
that the production design was fucking phenomenal. Like, Set Deck did a fucking great job. And all, like, the rat poops were actually, like, a great fucking
detail. That is a good detail. Yeah, there were a lot of rat poop everywhere.
Gnaw marks everywhere, like holes in different parts of the, like, it was dirty. It was
could have sworn, and this because I saw this movie like 20 years ago, and that the movie that somehow that house burns down and he dies in the fires, but that didn't happen. So what ended up happening is that he's basically put in an asylum and he's, you know, he ends up getting another rat or something.
Because you kind of get that same feeling. So what ultimately happens at the end is, after Willard is found out by what's her name, the female lead, to have kind of set the rats on R.L. Ermey's, like, body and eat him alive or whatever.
Right.
That he's kind of fighting for his life inside of the house now, because Ben has kind of sicked the horde on Willard. Sorry, I don't know the proper term for, like, a grouping of rats. But what is it, actually? It's probably something fun.
I don't know.
What is a group of rats? Let's find out. Hey, Siri, what is a group of rats called? Siri?
Siri. Technology, folks.
I actually never asked Siri. I actually just Google it quickly because it's faster. It's called a mischief of mice. I'm going to assume it's a mischief of rats.
Oh, okay. Makes sense.
Yeah, mischief. Mischief of rats. So mischief of rats, which is a very cool. That's why there's always, like, a fun one.
Yeah.
So a mischief of rats... are bombarding this one area. I think it's his father's study, right? Where he's, like, running up that mini stairwell, which I've seen this house in, like, every other fucking movie during this time. And he sees that the only windows that don't have bars are up in this area. And as he's running up, he's about to run past Ben, but Ben's right there, which also confuses me because Ben's a fucking, and even though he's a huge rat, he's still like how tall is Crispin Glover? Like 6'1".
Yeah.
Anyway. So, it's like, oh, hey, Ben. That's my Crispin Glover.
It's good. It's good.
Hey, I wasn't gonna try to hurt you. I just thought, maybe we could still be friends. And like, and then there's like a sort of OTS shot of Ben jumping into Crispin Glover's face and like biting away, I guess.
Right.
Which is like, he could have just ran up the stairs and jumped out the fucking window. Mm-hmm. But so he falls into the CGI mischief of rats. And then that's the end of it. So you think he's dead until you see Ben's like silhouette hobbling because he lost his leg in that rat trap.
Right, yeah.
Which I thought was funny that Ben, who's like super fucking strong, decided to gnaw off his leg instead of just pull the fucking bar up. Anyway, because it suggested Ben was super strong.
You're right.
No, no. Hobbles over silhouette style, and then you just see like a Crispin Glover silhouette come out and stab the shit out of Ben. Mm-hmm. And then that's somehow these people go in and get rid of this mischief, which is a generous term for literally thousands of rats.
I mean, I'm all for like cops not shooting people, but if I walked into a house, a mischief house with rats, and I would shoot the guy. I'd be like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we fade and he goes to the insane asylum. I don't know. I just honestly, the reason why I brought that up is I don't remember that ending. So it's like, I don't remember how this movie ended.
Oh, yeah.
I
actually don't remember that either. But I was going to mention maybe him falling into the mischief of rats is very close to falling into a fire.
Yeah, maybe I just confused it. Maybe I confused arachnophobia as well. That could have been as well, because there's a lot of fire in that movie.
Great fucking film, by the
debatable.
way.
Debatable.
I mean, I know we talked about it before.
We definitely, I'm on like, record
but
now, not enjoying that movie.
I still think it's a great fucking film.
It's fine.
I still think it's a great touch giving John Goodman his own little like jazz sort of like
music.
Happy music every time he pops up.
That was definitely cool. John Goodman's always a good type.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, yeah. Willard comes back. He's in the insane asylum. The other white rat that disappeared at the beginning of the movie pops out again. He's buddies with this rat. He's just biding his time before he becomes king of rats.
Socrates too. Yeah. Yeah, that's what happened. It was fun. Really good. I would say it's like a Tim Burton-esque movie, but darker, I would say. It's kind of like a fairy tale, right? Like a macabre-ish fairy tale or some shit, right? Like something along those lines.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Totally agree, yeah. So that's what made it extra fun, too. There was no overt exposition, right? It was just, this is what's happening in this period of time to this guy.
Yeah. It was really, really good. Alrighty.
Because I don't know if you noticed, but anytime he fell asleep, the story ended. The story was always with Willard.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah.
So he fell asleep. He woke up. It's with Willard again. There's never any off sort of scene things of what's happening outside of that. It's just Willard.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Let's move over to its ratings now. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give?
Don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm going to give 2003's Willard 7.7 sexy Crispin Glover bones.
I don't know why. Did I like these movies more this week? Shit. Yeah, I liked this one quite a bit. I was surprised. I remember liking it in 03 and I felt like nobody really talked about it after that. It was kind of like a
no
movie.
Well, because it was a weird.
It's kind of a weird movie. Yeah. Like,
obviously, Crispin Glover had a lot to do with this film because, like, who the fuck else during this time would be like, you know, what'd be another really great film to kind of remake? Maybe we do Willard. Do you remember that? It was so scary with rats. And Michael Jackson sang the song.
Yeah, I'm giving Willard 8 perfect cheekbones out of 10.
Yeah. And one very nicely defined butt.
Yeah, exactly. Cool.
One Dan Aykroyd chin.
Yeah.
There you go.
Cool. Alrighty, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
hey, stay spooky, okay? It's my Christmas.
You
girl, stay spooky.
Are becoming Willard. All right.
I just like when he's like, when he does things like that. I'm like, yeah.
Skeleton crew, it's time. The boys say goodbye. We love all of you. We really have to go poo. We'll miss you, but it's time for us to.